Good morning and welcome to Simply Finance. It's Sunday, April 21st. On today's show, find out why Bunk waited before taking on equity finance and get tips from a bank to avoid financial scams. Plus, the finance minister discusses economic progress and reforms with the IMF Egypt mission chief. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Finance. We start off with a look at the banking and financial services market, which has been reshaped by a growing group of digital-first players in recent years. In the UK alone, there are 39 neobanks that have collectively raised $8.7 billion in investment, according to data provider Dealroom. Earlier this week, it was reported that the fintech sector is again topping the investment rankings in the UK, with British neobank Monzo raising $340 million. Netherlands-based Bunk, launched in 2015, has also benefited from investor interest, raising €193 million in 2021 and a further €128 million more recently. Here to discuss Bunk's journey and the neobank landscape is Simply Finance correspondent Michael. So Michael, Bunk's founder Ali Niknam initially chose to self-fund the company until a Series A in 2021. What drove that decision?
Niknam had a unique approach compared to many other neobank founders. He had previously found success with his domain name provider TransAP, so he had the means to bootstrap Bunk in the early years. In 2012, when he began working on the idea, he saw problems in the existing banking system in the wake of the financial crisis. Friends were having to stop running businesses or were unable to buy houses. Niknam decided he would start a bank to address these issues. Interestingly, his primary motivation wasn't a love of banking itself, but rather a desire to develop a product that people genuinely wanted to use. By self-funding, he was able to maintain control and build Bunk according to his vision in those crucial early years before taking on external investment.
And Bunk wasn't the only neobank to emerge around that time, right? There seemed to be a perfect storm of factors driving this new wave of challengers.
Absolutely. Germany's N26 launched in 2013, and in the UK, Monzo and Revolut pulled up their shutters in 2015. There was a continuing rumble of dissatisfaction with incumbent banks in the wake of the great financial crisis. At the same time, an emerging market of digitally savvy consumers were prepared to try out these app-based providers offering a different kind of banking experience. The neobanks tended to take a very user-focused approach, appealing to a young and often highly mobile customer base who were frustrated with the service of traditional banks. This perfect storm, as you put it, really propelled the rise of these digital challengers.
And how has this played out for Bunk? They've raised significant funding in the last couple of years and recently posted some impressive financial results.
Bunk has definitely carved out a strong position for itself in the European neobanking market. In January of this year, it announced a profit of €53.1 million for 2023. Underlying that headline figure, the bank reported a rise in deposits from €1.7 billion to €7 billion and a staggering 488% rise in gross interest income. The €193 million Series A in 2021 and the more recent €128 million injection have no doubt helped fuel this growth. It's a real entrepreneurial success story, considering the idea was born out of Niknam's desire to address the problems he saw in the banking system post-financial crisis. Now Bunk is looking to expand further, with plans to enter the competitive UK market.
It will be interesting to see how Bunk fares in the UK and how the neobank landscape continues to evolve. Thanks for the insights, Michael. And speaking of financial matters, April is Financial Literacy Month, a time to promote smart money management skills. Part of those skills should include knowing how to spot potential fraud, a prominent issue impacting individuals and businesses. The Federal Trade Commission reports people lost $10 billion to scams in 2023, $1 billion more than in 2022, and the highest ever reported. One in four people reported losing money to scams, with a median loss of $500 per person. For more, we turn to our correspondent. What can you tell us about the fraud losses in Oklahoma specifically? According to the FTC report, Oklahoma residents reported $58.9 million in total fraud losses, with a median loss of $450 per person. Scammers can easily make texts, phone calls, and emails appear legitimate in hopes of tricking people into providing sensitive information, such as usernames, passwords, and financial details. Kirk Hayes, president of Arvest Bank Tulsa Region, says it's always a good idea to be aware of the most common types of scams and how to spot them. When in doubt, he advises taking a moment to research so you don't fall victim to fraud.
What are some of the most common scams reported so far in 2023? And what tips does Hayes offer to avoid them?
Imposter scams were once again the top fraud reported, accounting for $2.7 billion in losses. These involve people pretending to be your bank's fraud department, the government, a business, or even a relative. They typically warn of a serious problem that requires immediate attention, such as an unauthorized transaction or locked credit card. Hayes says if you receive an unsolicited message like this, don't click on any links. Instead, contact the business or agency allegedly responsible directly to verify if there is actually an issue. Taking that extra step can prevent your information from falling into the wrong hands.
Thanks for those tips to help Oklahomans protect their finances and avoid costly scams, David. Turning our attention to international news, Egypt's economic reforms are showing positive results, according to the country's finance minister. Minister Mohamed Mait recently met with the International Monetary Fund to discuss the progress of Egypt's IMF-backed reform program. For more on this, we turn to our correspondent, Abby. What were some of the key economic indicators the finance minister highlighted?
Minister Mait pointed to several encouraging signs that Egypt's economic situation is improving as a result of the reforms implemented in recent years. Over the past 9 months, Egypt achieved an initial budget surplus of 416 billion Egyptian pounds, or about $8.6 billion. That's a huge jump from the 50 billion pound surplus recorded in the same period last year, representing annual growth of over 8.5 times. Egypt also managed to keep its total budget deficit stable at around 5.4% of GDP, despite challenges from global economic crises and rising interest rates.
Those are indeed some impressive fiscal improvements. Did the minister provide any more details on what's driving this positive economic momentum?
A major factor has been a significant increase in tax revenues, which rose by over 1 trillion Egyptian pounds, or roughly $20.7 billion. That's a 41% increase attributed to the government's digitization efforts and an expanded tax base. Importantly, Minister Mait emphasized that this boost in revenues was achieved without imposing any new tax burdens on citizens or businesses. He also highlighted the government's ongoing commitment to structural reforms aimed at expanding the private sector's role in the economy to drive investment, production, exports, and job creation.
Encouraging the private sector while improving government finances is always a delicate balance for economies undergoing an IMF program. How is the Egyptian government planning to support households impacted by the reforms, especially with high inflation?
Social protection is a key priority, according to Minister Mait, particularly for low and middle-income families feeling the strain of rising prices. He noted that actual spending on support programs, grants, and social benefits has already increased by nearly 34% over the past 9 months. Looking ahead to the new budget for the coming fiscal year, support allocations are slated to rise even further. The government is stressing its commitment to sharing the burden of reforms with the Egyptian people.
Striking the right balance between economic reforms and social protections is crucial for Egypt as it continues to strengthen its economy with the IMF's support. Thank you, Abby, for this update on Egypt's promising economic progress and reform plans. Shifting our focus to another economy, Russia's is expected to grow by 3.6% in 2024, matching the growth rate of the previous year, according to Russian Finance Minister Anton Siluanov. This comes after Russia's GDP dropped by 2.1% in 2022, following the full-scale invasion of Ukraine and onset of Western sanctions. For more on this, let's bring in our correspondent. So, how has Russia's economy managed to rebound despite the sanctions and growing isolation?
Russia has employed a variety of methods to weather the economic storm brought on by Western sanctions. a key factor has been continued oil sales, particularly to major buyers like India and China. This has helped bolster Russia's economy and keep revenue flowing in. Minister Siluanov also noted that Russia is being careful with its budget balance, keeping the deficit around 1% of GDP. Earlier comments from the finance ministry had initially pegged 2024 growth at 2.3%, but this was revised upwards to 3.6% due to strong economic performance at the start of the year.
These strong growth predictions seem to call into question the effectiveness of the broad Western sanctions levied against Russia. What areas do these sanctions target, and how successful have they been?
The Western sanctions against Moscow are indeed far-reaching, encompassing restrictions on trade, finance, technology, dual-use goods, industry, transport, and luxury items. However, Russia's economy has proven more resilient than many expected. That said, this resilience has come at the cost of increased dependence on a narrower set of trade partners compared to before the invasion. The UK Defence Ministry also warned in late 2022 that Russia's economy was at risk of overheating due to increased military spending, labor shortages, and growing inflation. So while Russia's economy is growing, it's not out of the woods yet.
It will certainly be interesting to see how Russia's economic situation develops as the geopolitical landscape continues to shift. Despite the sanctions, it seems that strategic economic partnerships and careful budget management have allowed Russia to keep its economy on a growth trajectory for now. Thanks for your insights, correspondent. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Finance. We'll see you back here tomorrow.